Thank you very much. So we'll start from the beginning. So this year has to be Shabbos, which has its own halachas. We'll come to some of those afterwards. But it should be mentioned at the beginning because it does have an effect on Pesach itself. It does not affect real on Erev Pesach except in preparation for the Seder, which we'll try to cover some of that in a little bit. Okay. So the fundamental job before Pesach, I know, is cooking also involved, but cooking is not the main job before Pesach. Cleaning is the main job. And the notion is supposed to get rid of all our chametz. There are a variety of ways to get rid of chametz. But there are two mitzvahs that are involved in getting rid of chametz. One of them is called Bayiro by Matzah, and our own chametz. That's one mitzvah. And the other mitzvah is obligated actually to destroy chametz. So most of the things that we do before Pesach are to make sure we don't own chametz. The only thing we do to destroy chametz is the night before Pesach we search. We usually find only what we put out, unless you're really diligent and some people in your house are not as good at cleaning. And then you find other things, and those things should be burned the next day. When you burn the chametz before the time on Erev Pesach, you fill the mishvah tashbisu, which is to destroy the chametz. There's a mitzvah like that. Okay. We also get rid of the chametz by eating it, because obviously you get rid of it before the time. And we also sell the chametz. So the purpose of selling the chametz is really designed to prevent monetary loss. So if you think about this, you know, we live in a society where people, of course, buy things on sale. But if you lived, you know, 120 years ago, you had products which, you didn't have a refrigerator, but you'd have products that just stayed. And particularly if you had things like liquor, liquor stayed. Liquor is probably the most expensive thing anybody owned, and almost all liquor is chametz. And if they would have to throw it out every year, it would be a big loss. So consequently, there is this notion to be able to sell the chametz. You clearly can sell the chametz permanently to a non-Jew. We're not going to go into how the chametz sale works, other than to tell you that the chametz sale is legally binding. It's an English contract. It's a Hebrew contract. There's an agreement. The non-Jew makes a down payment on the chametz. He makes a down payment on the lease of your property, wherever the chametz is found. And we make an agreement that we'll come to terms later what's based on experts, which sometimes is done in the normal world of commerce. Okay, but we're going to come now to, I'll call it the practical things you need to do before in your house before Pesach in order to make sure that it's all in order. I always start by telling you that spring cleaning and Pesach cleaning is not the same. If you want to do your drapes and your curtains, that's very nice. Do them before Shavuos when there's nothing else to do except for cooking a couple of meals. But drapes, nobody eats off. They may be dirty, and if you want to clean them, you can clean them, but there's no chametz on them. There may be chametz on the windowsills. There may be chametz on a lot of places in your house, and that really depends on who's living in the house and what their eating habits are. The principle of searching for chametz is you have to search for chametz any place where you might bring chametz during the year, not the only place where normally chametz is brought. So this is, I think, a very typical scenario. People in the middle of their meal on Shabbos, and wherever they store the drinks, unless they're just getting water from the refrigerator, wherever they store the drinks, they might be going to get drinks someplace. Soda, juice, seltzer, whatever it is, from some pantry. Now that pantry may only have drinks, in which case it's not chametz, except that you go in there with your crumbs and therefore you have to search it. The first Mishnah in Psachim starts off by saying that you have to check the first two and the top two, and then it's machlokas exactly what it means, but the first one, the top two, or the first one, the top one of the, you can find a place at the table if you want, okay? Because that's the place where chametz would normally fall of the wine press. If you have barrels stacked up, you're going to go take the top barrel or top two barrels. That's where the chametz is going to fall. So you have to search that. So the fundamental rule of searching for chametz, you have to search for chametz wherever you might have brought it during the year, and before you do that, there's no shulchan aruch, before you do that, you have to clean the area to make sure that it's a last stop. Now, there is a general discussion as to what is the purpose of the search for chametz today. And this machlokas of 20th and 21st century poskim in terms of how diligently you have to search. So those who feel, well, it's true you clean the house, but you have to search under the beds and under every place else and so on and so forth. There are those who hold that, and I think that's legitimate. And there are those who hold that, well, if you really clean the house very thoroughly, then you're really doing a perfunctory search, which I think is what most people do, but it's because they already did a thorough cleaning of the house and search, even though they didn't do it with a candle or a flashlight and so on, so they got rid of all the chametz. Okay, but you still have to do the bedikas chametz to make sure that there's no place you miss. So you can't just, like, walk around and pretend you're looking, but you look in the corner. So I know, just like this in my house, Karen puts out 10 pieces, Yosef knows where they are, he jumps right at them, and I still walk around the whole room. I don't, you know, he puts them in the bag, but I still walk around the whole room and look around. And I do find somebody in my house has bad habits. He leaves like little pieces of chocolate crunch over there. I know chocolate may not be chametz, so you might guess who it is, or whatever it is. So there might be things here and there that we didn't think about because they're just like furniture. So we don't think about them. When you do the search, you're supposed to think about what thing might be there. Okay. We're going to turn to the kitchen, which is the most significant aspect, if you will, of preparing for Pesach, is to turn the kitchen over from chametzik to pesachik. Fundamental principle of what we're doing when we change the house from chametz to Pesach is we are taking all the utensils and making them new. Right? That's in there's a long piyut that's said on, we don't say that, but that's said on Shabbos HaGadol, which describes all the lachas of Pesach, and in there it describes the notion of making new knives. We're not making new knives, we're cleaning them to extent, and this will come into play in terms of how we kasher things. Okay. There are different methods of koshering, just to review them. The most severe method of koshering is libun gamur, which heats them to glow, to white hot or to red hot, and that will destroy the chametz. It's not expunging the chametz, it's destroying the chametz. A self-cleaning oven is libun gamur, although now, we'll get to this, there is a new kind of self-cleaning oven. Every new invention always has problems. A new self-cleaning oven, which is a low-temperature self-clean. I don't know how it works, but it doesn't work for koshering because it's not a high temperature. So if you're going to get a new oven, make sure you don't get one of those. All right? I just found out this year, so it must be a new oven, new technology this past year.
The poor person
okay.
who bought it.
Right?
Yeah. That's what it must
yeah. Okay. But Lieben Gummer typically is a blowtorch. A blowtorch doesn't mean like this and like this. It means you actually hold a blowtorch on the piece till it's red hot, and therefore whatever comes there is going to be destroyed. If you happen to ever torch your oven, you'll notice as you go back and forth, there are sparks. Well, that spark means there was food there, and you hold it on the spot, and it will destroy the spark. The spark eventually will end, will go away, but the issue is it has to be red hot. So using a blowtorch is not, again, an exercise going back and forth, rather an exercise in making something red hot. Again, self-cleaning oven is red hot. There are other ways to make things red hot, such as if you put an item. This is, some people discuss the issue of trying to kosher a grill. I think it's virtually impossible, but theoretically, it's possible. You'd have to get new bricks, and you'd have to, of course, make enough heat so that the roof would be koshered. But the place where you put the grate where you put the food on, that has to become red hot. So the methodology that I've seen recommended for that is you take bricks underneath it and put bricks on top of it, and you burn them, and now the whole thing becomes red hot. Okay, I'm not sure whether it also will cause the buckle. I don't know. I mean, these are made to take height. But anyway, that's Lieben Gomer. That's the most severe kind. And if you have a broiler, that certainly requires Lieben Gomer. There are those who feel that a regular oven also needs Lieben Gomer, and we don't hold that. But you will find, if you go to like Jewish hardware stores, you'll find oven liners. The reason they're oven liners is because even though you kosher the oven with the next level of koshering, there are those who feel, oh, that's not enough, you need Lieben Gomer. If you don't have Lieben Gomer, you have to put in an insert. Okay, so I don't think you have to do that. That's my masara, so to speak. But if you have a self-cleaning oven, that's Lieben Gomer anyway. If you don't have a self-cleaning oven, so then you have to do the next level Lieben, which we'll come to, and that is Lieben Kal, which is heating some to the extent that straw will be burnt if you put it on. So if you put your oven on for 550 degrees, the hottest temperature, most ovens, 50 degrees, you put it on for an hour, now take a piece of straw and touch it to the oven, it will burn. All right, it will melt, whatever is going to happen to the straw. So that's called Lieben Kal. It's not white hot, but it's hot enough. So we hold that is enough to clean an oven, a conventional oven. We'll come back to different items, but that conventional oven can be clean like that, can be kosher like that. The third level is Irui Roschim, which is pouring boiling water over it, which is common for sinks. Let's skip the level. Hagala, which is usually translated purging, which is boiling, and the boiling does not destroy the chametz, the boiling expunges the chametz. So the principle in halacha is called kabol ok pach kach bol to, the same way something absorbs, the same way it will spit out, it will adsorb. So therefore, if something swallows or absorbs chametz by liquid heat, it will also spit it out the same way. Think of a ladle, right, that you put into your a chicken soup with chametz tikka knedlach or noodles. That obviously is not a chametz. So you need to do it that ladle, the pot also. The ladle is you would need to purge it in boiling water. In order to do that, I'll come back to how to do it. Okay. The next level is called Iru Roskim, pouring boiling water over something. This is most typical for a sink, for a countertop, where the item is not put into something hot, but something hot would spill out. So if you have a countertop and certainly a sink, it is normal that you would spill out spaghetti water into the sink, and now your sink is chametz stick. All right, so therefore you'd have to clean it the same way, kind of the same way. You'd have to pour boiling water into it. The same is true if you have a countertop made of stone or metal, you can kosh it the same way. If you have a countertop made of plastic, that does not work. I'll go through what the different materials are in a couple minutes. All right, the last level is called Mira V'Iroi, which is soaking. So there is this notion of a three-day glass soak, which is like a familiar concept. So I think you will not find the Sefer today, for probably the last 20, 30 years, that says you're allowed a kosher glass, except for Sfardim. Sfardim, not only kosher glass, they might even use glass without koshering it and so on, but so if you're Sfardim, you go to Sfardim Post, you find out exactly the details, but otherwise Ashkenazim do not use glass. But there is a notion of koshering glass, so we typically do not do this for Pesach. However, I'll tell you the following. You might have glasses which you never use for hot. Now, never use for hot means you don't use for hot at the table, and you don't wash with hot, meaning you take a glass and you wash it out separately from everything else. You don't even use your sponge, you just wash it out. Like if you have like fancy crystal, you probably don't. You're very careful with it and you wash it out very carefully. You don't wash it in the hot water with everything else. You don't put it in the basin, you keep it out. So if that's the case, you could probably do this three-day soak. You may not even need that three-day soak. Okay. But it's very rare, I think, that is the case. For the most part, we don't use glass. But we do. What is it?
We don't kosher glass.
There is an application of Mila V'Iroi of soaking, which I'll give you back in a few minutes. Okay. Now we've gone down gradations of koshering. The principle is you can always go up a grade of koshering to kosher something. I mean, if something needs pour boiling water over it, if you put it into boiling water, that certainly is good enough. It's even better than good enough. If you have something that requires putting into boiling water and you do leave one kal on it, so that would be more than enough. So, for example, if you take this ladle, let's suppose you have a cast iron ladle, and you can put it in your oven, and you'll put it in your oven, a regular oven, and you'll do leave one kal, that will kosher that ladle, right? If it's cast iron, it won't get ruined. Okay.
Now, can we go back to those glasses? Okay. The three-day. What if you, I can't remember if I do or don't, so it's not like necessarily okay. applicable to me, but what if you koshered glasses like years ago or somebody else and you've put them aside for Pesach, so they had the three-day soak years ago, you know, whatever, are those shouldn't be used anymore because they weren't?
I'll just say this, whatever you did years ago based on the halacha you learned years ago, you can keep.
Okay.
Right?
No, because I'm thinking also people, like you inherited stuff.
I'll give you a, don't be scared about this. The first sentence is going to scare you, but don't be scared. Okay. Today you will find almost no posek who says you don't have to toivel china. Almost nobody. You look at all the lists, everybody says to toivel china. Okay. When I got married, I was one of the unique, my family had a masorah toivel china. Okay, so now all these families hear about this because they ask about their kids got married. Should I toivel china? The answer is yes. All right, I didn't talk about china. What should I do? I say keep using it, because 30, 40 years ago. Now it could be they changed the way china was done. It could be they changed the psak. I don't know what it is, but if you've been doing something for 30 years based on a legitimate psak, that's it. You don't go back and say okay, now they found the new right. Now sometimes
so
it's just an error.
You would give your child, like if I would give my children the china that I had, do they have to tovel it now?
Oh, that's a good question. When they get mad, I'll have to think about it.
No, but like I'm saying, even now, like
yeah,
I gave it to them to use.
Yeah,
like,
no. Again, first of all, as long as they're single, they're under your domain. I know they may not seem like you're under your domain, but they're under your domain. All right. If they get married, so that's single okay. household. That might not change things. I'm not sure would either. I don't think if you take things from your parents' home, which is kosher, you have to worry about.
Re-kosher.
What they did, all right? Maybe things just didn't do because they didn't know. That's a different story. So then that should be fixed, okay? But
if I didn't know,
some of these things are based on a psak, which was
right.
The way it was done years ago. Okay, Okay, one principle I talked about the higher level of kosher and the lowest kosher. Second general koshering rule is that, and this I don't think I've mentioned from year to year, but I should, that some materials might get ruined during koshering. And if you're worried about that, you can't kosher that thing. You can't, like, be on the edge. Like, I'm going to be very careful. Okay, so a classic example of this is the glass cooktops, which really can't be koshered, all right? But you can kosher the glass cooktop, like, if you have a glass cooktop over electric burners. So you can kosher them by keeping them out long enough. It's a machlokas how long. I wrote in the booklet now 30 minutes. That's what I saw the lay of sock was 30 minutes, keep the burners on, and then the glass top. But the whole glass top is not koshered, only the part where the heat was on, all right? And the rest of the part, you should put trivets on, you know. You can't put foil on it, that will crack it, right? So one of the articles says, well, you could gingerly use a blowtorch for the areas in between. Okay, who are we kidding? Nobody's going to do it seriously because you don't want to crack the glass top. So that's obviously impossible to do. It may work, and you may be able to do it. It may even be able to kosher it and expunge whatever's there, but nobody's going to do it properly. So that's really the point. There's something that you're afraid of breaking, you can't kosher it. Okay, materials that can be koshered: wood, stone, metal, natural rubber, real glass. And I would point out that today's glass is, for the most part, not real glass. It's oven-tempered glass, and I probably cite this every year, and that is, if you remember your grandmother, when you went over for tea, and before she put the boiling water in, she put a spoon into the glass so it wouldn't crack. They don't do that anymore, because the glass is not going to crack anymore, because the glasses are made differently than they were made 60 years ago. Okay. Materials with cannot be kosher with Pesach: plastic, melmac, nylon, china, porcelain. Formica is the same as plastic, which can be koshered from treif to kosher, but not from chametz to Pesach. Chametz to Pesach the rules are more strict. Enamel and china is the same thing. Continuing Teflon, Corningware, Corel, and Pyrex, Duralex, Melmac, Silverstone, which is not stone. Stoneware is also not stone. Cannot be kosher with Pesach. Okay. In order to kosher something, you have to first clean it, make sure that there's no chametz in it. So if there are cracks or crevices, those have to be cleaned out well. Sometimes you have items which are not cleanable, meaning you can't clean the crack properly. Classic example, I think, is you have knives that are made with a wood handle, and of course the metal part is, the knife part is metal, and at the edge you could see you just can't get it clean, right? It just, whatever you do to it, your toothbrush, so it doesn't get clean, so that can't be kosher. You can get it clean, fine, but if it's not cleanable, it's not kosherable. You have to remove all dirt, stains, and rust before koshering. You have to leave it for 24 hours before koshering, except for self-cleaning, because all the rest of them you're expunging. So what do you expunge? You're expunging something which is more than 24 hours old. After 24 hours, it becomes, well, nosin tam lefgama, has a negative taste, and now you can expunge it, and that koshers the item. Some items which are not cleanable: sieve, colander, kneading board, rolling pin, cake mixing bowls, grater, grinder, bread machines, toaster oven. Okay. Did that. Okay. Okay, all koshering must be completed before the time of Isur Chametz, which I think on this year is 11:45. I think it's in the book. I'll give you the book list when we finish. All right, let's go through the kitchen. So pots require hargola. Frying pans and baking pans cannot be koshered because they require libun gamur. If you have a cast iron frying pan and you could put it in the self-cleaning oven, that would work. But otherwise, you can't, because those are considered to be broiled. They're not used with liquid. They're used, we'll say, dry, even though they might put some fat in it. So frying pans, baking pans cannot be koshered because any libun gomer, you can't do it. Pots require hagala. Spoons, forks, all metal knives require hagala. Again, boiling. The method of boiling is as follows. You would, so the question is what kind of pot to use. So some people have a pot that they use from year to year. I don't kosher frankly Pesach that often, silverware and so on, because they don't, you know, I trade for a few every year, so every like 5 years I decide, okay, there's enough trade ones, I'm going to kosher them now for Pesach, and they'll be also kosher from trade, but otherwise we don't use our year-long silverware, we don't use for Pesach, we don't kosher. for Pesach, but we do have in the basement, I have a pot, which is an old pot, and at some point the bottom got burnt, and now that's my Pesach kashering pot. Okay? But you don't have to use a Pesach pot, you can use a chametz pot, which has not been used for 24 hours. However, almost everybody says yes, but it's preferable, which means you should kosher that pot before you use it. So either way, one way or the other, you're going to have a Pesach pot before you do Hagol. You're going to fill it up with boiling water. Fill it up with water. You're going to boil it till it's a racing boil. In order to kosher anything, you're going to dip whatever the item is need to be koshered. Again, it was clean, wait 24 hours. You're going to dip it into the boiling water, take it out of the boiling water, put it under cold water. Putting it under cold water is the activity of making it like new, because that's how all metal things are made. They're made hot, they're forged, then they're put under cold water. That's what makes them new. So after koshering for Pesach, this actually is done also for things that became tameh for sacrifices. That's how the origin of the halach is. It's a custom to do that for koshering during the year, but not necessary. But koshering for Pesach, you do have to put it in the cold water after you kosher it. So let's suppose you kosher silverware. You have a whole set of silverware you want to kosher. You can't put the whole set of silverware in. You have to put in a few at a time, so that they will each be able to be surrounded by boiling water. My recommendation typically is you take some net-type material, an onion bag. There might be some things you use for washing hose in the dishwasher, in the washing machine, depending. But they need big holes big enough that the water is going to get through. And you put a few in a bag at a time. You dip the bag in, shake it around to make sure the water got around all the utensils. So you can do 3, 4, 5 utensils at a time, depending, you know, how big the bag is, how big the pot is, and how dexterous you are.
It needs to be in for a few seconds.
What is it?
How long does that
take? A few seconds. Then you take them out, put them under the cold water.
But if you're using the Pesach pot, that means that you have to kosher the stove before it's to boil it? Because you don't want to chafe up your Pesach.
No, you just have... Okay, so if you don't use the stove for 24 hours beforehand, then it's clean. You can do whatever you want. You're not going to cause anything to be
to put your Pesach pot on.
You can put your Pesach pot on, yes, as long as it's 24 hours. I mean, I typically kosher the oven before I start. I kosher the stove top before I start.
And then the sink has to be kosher too, because you have to wash it off in the sink.
That's all fine. The sink I kosher last. But I also have...
But once you rinsed it off in cold water, then you rinsed it off in the chametz sink.
No, I rinsed it off in the bag, and I put it on the counter.
Oh, okay.
On a towel that's sitting there to absorb all the liquid. Okay.
You can use tongs also, right?
You can use the tongs also. If you use the tongs, you'll have to do it twice. Because the place where the tongs is holding. So, I mean, you could also use the old-fashioned method where they tied each one by string. A little tedious. So I think onion bags or some kind of bag is a little bit more functional. Okay. Yeah, I actually have also one electric burner, meaning a plug-in that I keep stored away, and every Erev Pesach, when I decide to kosher, right before Pesach, I take that out. That's what I start with, so because it's functional in order to use for a teapot. I put the teapot on there. So I'll come to the stovetop. Okay, so come to the stovetop, that will be needed. Okay, let's go back to... spoon forks, will melech zagola. Kiddush cups, wine bottles used only for wine and washed separately during the year need vila v'irui. So some people put their Kiddush cups right into the basin, in which case they're really chametz. Hot water chametz, and they need to be kosher by putting into boiling water. Most people, I think, don't do that. Most people wash the Kiddush cups separately, leave them on the counter, they wash them off. Right? So therefore they need what's called mila v'irui. This is Rav Shimon Eider, who is not in Makehill, but he wrote this a long time ago in his books on Pesach, that if you have such items that we use only for wine and wash separately during the year, mila v'irui, wash it out, clean it out, rinse it out again, and that you're done, right? I happen to take my bechers and I also put them on a dish rack in the sink. I line that dish rack in the sink and I pour boiling water over them, then I turn them over, boiling water again, so therefore I did irui. I didn't dip into boiling water because that even irui is more than is necessary. But just in case, I have guests, maybe they did something I wouldn't do and so on. They're not washing it in the sink, but they may, you know, take their soup and noodles, and everything to soup and noodles, and now they took a sip of wine, you know, so it covers those kind of things that might happen. Okay, but otherwise you can do that. Kiddush cups, wine bottles used for whiskey or beer cannot be kosher Pesach. Very interesting. I just read an article about about, I think it was either, it was one of the magazines, OU. I printed them out because I couldn't get any of them hard copy yet, but the OU, Star K, and CRC, so I think it was the OU actually had an article in it about alcohol and koshering whiskey factories for Pesach, and they were saying that you have to keep cleaning and cleaning and cleaning with really caustic cleaners till the smell is gone, because the smell of whiskey is the smell of whiskey, and that's gives Tom. Smell and taste are really the same, you know, taste is on your, it's over here, it's the same place where you smell from. Okay. Somebody in medicine probably knows better than me exactly how to explain this, but okay. Okay. Candle trays, you wash thoroughly. You don't eat on them. You put, so they don't have to be kosher. Dishwashers, dish towels, tablecloths can be washed thoroughly and they can use, and many people, like we have separate ones for Pesach, but really it's more for the look than for the halacha, right? Countertops. So if you have a real stone, marble, granite countertop, it can be cleaned and pour boiling water over it. So this year I investigated the steam. Somebody called me a few weeks ago, which was enough time to try and find out about steam. Because over the last few years, people have said, well, this rabbi said you can use steam, and that rabbi said you can steam, and that rabbi said you can steam, and these rabbis I respect, but they're not poskim, all right? They're like my level rabbis, okay? I respect them, but they're not poskim. And it always seems to me this is not possible, because I know when you steam, like the back of my suit, you know, it gets wrinkled, you steam it, it tells you keep it horizontal, keep it vertical, right? If you turn it down, the steam goes up. How are you steaming the table? It's not hot, right? Notice by the time it gets to the table, it's not hot. Not only that, it's not projected onto the table. You're getting maybe droplets of cooled off steam onto the counter. Okay, so that's not good. But I thought, and this is true, although not practical, but probably when they kosher like hotels for regular parties, there's a treif party Saturday night, now they want to kosher the counters. They might just cover them, right? But if they're still, maybe they kosher them somehow. What do they do? So I don't know if they do this, but they could do this. They could take their industrial pressurized steamers. I mean, we've seen them, right? You've seen them, like, certainly in, you know, movies or TV or whatever it is. It's basically, it's like a hose, like a fire hose, but it's not spraying water. It's spraying, it's pushing out steam. So that may be okay. But on the other hand, you got to be trained to do that. I don't think most people could do that. It could be that some of the groups that actually do koshering around, maybe they use those, because they're probably trained and it's probably faster and it's only neater than pouring boiling water on it. My recommendation is you want to kosher your counters, pour boiling water over it, make sure you have at least two people there, one to pour, one to wipe as you go, so the water doesn't end up all over behind your counters and everything. Okay. But anyway, it can be koshered by Eroskim. I spoke to somebody at the OU last week. I saw at a wedding and he said, I have granite counters. I don't kosher them. I cover them. It's not worth it. Okay. So that's the judgment.
Have you seen the steamers that we're talking about?
Personally,
I haven't seen them.
I converted to a steamer. I was using hot water for many years, and I was like, this is awesome. And it has a hose, and it's like, you can direct it exactly in between all the rooms.
Oh, okay, so I'd like to see. Maybe, like, I'll come to your house and take a look what you have.
It's pretty, like...
It pushes the steam out. It's not like a closed steamer.
No, it's like a hose thing.
No, it's
an industrial steamer.
It's a nozzle.
It's like you do your faucet, and you can't, like... throw the water up into
okay.
this, you can take your
okay.
Google it right now.
And really so, get it into
it. Google it, okay. Okay, so I'd like to see that.
From my sister, and I just bought it, and I love
okay,
it. I love
so
it.
I'd like to see it, okay. So, okay, fine. All right, so if that's usable, then it's usable if it's real. Yes?
The pouring hot water, so the hot water has to hit every single spot of the counter.
That's correct.
When the counter is dry, correct? Like
okay,
can't
yes.
Water on the
yes.
Before.
So, yeah, so you need a teapot. Basically, I do with a teapot. I mean, I don't do it here, but I do it in my sink. It's the same thing. I take a teapot, and I always say it's like a crayon. You go back and forth, back and forth, back
it's
and forth.
It's almost impossible because when you pour on this spot, the water is already going to spread to the spot next to it.
So, you have to do it fast, okay? No, you have to do it, I'm not serious. Do it fast, and you have to be realistic. This is for human beings to do, right? I mean, it is not like a new idea. This was being done years ago, so it's not like people were more dexterous than then they are now. But I think, you can't just be lazy about it and, you know, just... Because then,
the
yes, it's dried off.
The steamer could actually end up being hotter.
What is it?
With an appropriate steamer, it could actually be hotter than trying to put...
No, if it's pressurized, then pushing it out, so yes.
Be hotter than trying to put boiling water, because the second you take it off the stove, it's going to stop boiling.
Well, okay, but it's still... Yeah, okay. That's fine. Okay, but anyway, if I'd like to see this. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
I thought it was better, but...
You should have brought it with you. Show and tell.
Okay, yes.
You don't have a picture?
Okay.
Everybody's using them.
What if with the steamer you have water on the counter already? Would the steamer then heat up the water that's on the counter?
No. So, no. It won't. So, I mean, I discussed with the person at the OU, a very high up person, and that wasn't Robert Ganak, but somebody else high up at the OU. He actually said, he told me the name of somebody in the OU who devised this idea that he puts water on the counter, I don't think it's a recommendation, and he has this like long pole, and on the pole he has metal circles, and he puts that on the fire, and then he rolls it back and forth over it, so that raises, okay, so, you know, I'm sure it's also messy, but, you know, these guys are in kashrus, so, you know, they used to...
What the steam is. So it's not Eroi, is it Levon Kal?
No. Steam would be, it would be Eroi. It would have to be Eroi. Yeah, but it has to be strong enough and hot enough.
I think the problem came when somebody told me to take your pot and you put a pot on your granite, then that means that when you kosher with the water, you have to put the water on a stone, and then the water has to...
Oh, so some people feel you should put a stone on the counter also, I think, okay.
Because the way that you're chametzing is putting the pot directly. If some, the man is like, not to put them into the pots on your granite, then you don't have that issue.
Right.
So then
some people say put a hot stone on. Okay.
I think mine is like this.
Okay, I'll have to look at it. I don't want to take time now, but if you have whatever pictures you have sent to me, I'll take a look at all of them. Okay.
Just have one question. So with the counters, do you have to wipe it down, leave it 24 hours, and then do the counter?
Yes. Every single thing has to be clean 24 hours. Okay. And use for cold. You can use it for cold,
right. But
no hot. So when you do the sink, my recommendation is, after you clean the sink, put something on top of it, which anybody will realize that must be there. Like if you put something upside down on it, hopefully people in the house will realize that, you know, it should stay there. Don't touch. Okay. What is it? Yeah. Go to 24 hours. That works. Okay. Okay. Food cabinets, dish cabinets, fridge, sink, and so on. They all have to be cleaned. Okay. So food cabinets, dish cabinets, and refrigerator have to be cleaned. If you look in these booklets, so almost everybody today says cover them, and I still stand by what I say. I don't think you have to cover them. But they all do say if you do cover them, the fridge, make sure you make holes, because they're made with holes. Now some of the floors, so to speak, of the refrigerator are solid. Okay, so you can put a cover on, no big deal. But some of them are not made. They're made for the flow of air to go through, and if you block the flow of air to go through, you know, the new refrigerator. If you have a practice of putting hot things directly on your refrigerator, it's okay, fine. Most people, I think, don't do that. Most people let food cool off before they put it in. I don't really understand like the biology of it, but they always say that. Karen always says, "No, you can't put something very hot right in the refrigerator because it's going to ruin the food."
Because it raises the temperature
of everything else. Like
it raises the temperature inside the refrigerator.
No, so that's about the refrigerator, not about the food. But she's. Whatever, I've heard this claim, not from her, from other people, that actually what you put in is no good. I don't really, you know, it's supposed to cool off more slowly. Okay, I don't, again, the science of that piece I don't really get, but notwithstanding that most people don't put hot foods directly into the refrigerator, all right? If that's the case, then the floors of the refrigerator don't really become chametz, because there's no hot on them, there's no heat on them. Okay. If you have food cabinets, there are two different kinds of food cabinets. There are those in which you have cans and bottles and so on. Wipe them off, and you can just use them. I don't think that's the line. But then you have those food cabinets, shelves, where you put in your cereal and your flour and things like that. And obviously those, it's not sufficient to just wash them, which you should do. You should wash and clean them. You're not going to kosher them, but you should cover them before you put your Pesach things down, just because I think the cleaning process is not going to be, you know, we'll say 1,000% sufficient.
Now, when you're washing these cabinets, you know, like Clorox washing, or like, does it make a difference what you're washing it with?
So when I do it, I take a paper towel and I take hot water and I wipe it off
just
back
water?
And forth.
Not a cleanser on it? Like, that's what I'm saying. Does it need like something that would really clean it?
I don't get along with cleanser. No, I use cleanser when I need to, but no, it's not. I mean, if I would see something is stained, then I would use cleanser. But usually, it's not really that. It's like dust,
right?
Whatever the dust is, it might be dust. It might be flour dust. Whatever it is. So wiping with something wet is going to get it off. If it's sticky, then I would use probably 409. That's my favorite. When I do the counters, so to get the counters clean.
How much do you have to clean it?
What is it?
If you're closing the cabinet.
How much do you have to clean it? I kind of always use the opportunity to do spring cleaning.
Not really at all.
But if I could check it off my list.
Not really at all.
The last thing I'll get to.
If you include it on your chametz that you're selling list, you don't, by the way, sell your dishes, you don't sell your pots and pans, you just sell the chametz that's in there.
You sell flour that's sold out in your cabinet. You know what I mean? Because if you're not cleaning it, then I always think, no one would buy flour that's spilled out in your cabinet, right?
Okay.
So do you have to clean it?
So the answer is you don't have to clean it. You could sell it. I mean, I think it's probably more proper to clean it, but I don't think halakhically if you didn't clean it, it wouldn't be chametz lo tasa. You're selling whatever chametz is in there.
But that should be listed in your mechiras chametz, then that cabinet that
yes,
might have
wherever
flour.
Wherever it is, you should. So I typically write in my own chametz form. All the places where I know chametz is, typically I write as marked, because every single cabinet, like the kitchen cabinets, are as marked. I don't write, the left one over there and the right one over there and that one, they're all marked. They all have whatever marking. Some of them have ribbons, I can't put them on. Some have messing tape because I put them on, whatever it is. But they're marked. they're marked one way or the other, right? They're marked one way or the other. And those are as marked. You need a new blech. When I say new blech, if you have a blech from last year Pesach, that's fine, but the regular blech used every Shabbos is obviously filled with spillover. So that really, if you want to kosher it, you need libun gomer. You'd have to blowtorch it, put it in the self-cleaning oven. It's not going to fit, so get a new blech. Okay, let's go back to ovens.
If you have an electric plata,
A what?
Plata.
The electric one. Can you,
So, that's interesting. I don't have a plata on here, I think electric plata would have to be cleaned. If it's glass, it's clamped. If it's metal, so it would be clean. Put it on, highest temperature. You can't blowtorch it, you'll ruin it, right? And then I think you have to cover it. Whatever, heavy duty foil, maybe you have a blech of some sort, you put on top of it, keep it, covered.
I've even thought to do that, just put a new one.
Okay.
For paper, the platter.
Okay. So let's go back to oven. Self-cleaning oven, Lieben Gomer is fine, except for the new Cold Star, which are called Aqualift and Steam Clean. Don't get those. If you have those darms, hey, I don't want that one. Okay, regular ovens, clean with caustic oven cleaner, such as
Easy Off.
It is Easy Off. I didn't imagine that. Easy Off. Thank God it's been a long time since I had a regular oven. Okay? So self-cleaning is like really a blessing because that smell is not unpleasant. But clean with the caustic oven cleaner. If it's clean, proceed. If it's not clean, do it again. If there are stains that remain that are not really substantive, then they're just stains. They're not considered to be chametz. You've already certainly made them unedible, and then you would wait 24 hours after you cleaned it, kosh with libun and kosher with libun kal. Put in the highest temperature for an hour, and this is an issue depending what your oven looks like. If you have an oven where bake and broil are in the same oven, and it's not self-cleaning, you need to kosher it twice. You need to kosher once on bake at 550 for an hour, and once on broil for an hour, because the bake element is underneath, and the broil element is on top, and therefore, when you put the broil element on, the top gets as hot as it's going to get, but the bottom does not, and vice versa. When you want 50, the bottom gets as hot as it's going to get, but the top does not, so that's it. You have to do it twice. If on the other hand, you have a broiler underneath, like a separate piece of broiler, so then it's really the same fire that's doing both, and you're not going to be able to kosher the broiler. If you want to kosher the broiler, you'd have to blowtorch it, right? Or put it in a self-cleaning oven. But a broiler would need Lieben Gomer, because obviously you heat, that's direct fire. Continuous cleaning oven is the same. Continuous cleaning oven is, there's some kind of chemical on the wall of it, but really it's the same as a regular oven. You have to clean it, whatever the instructions might be of that particular oven, and wait 24 hours and so on. Okay, stovetops. If it's electric, plain electric, old-style electric, where you see the coil, when it's red hot, that's Lieben Gomer. If it's gas, so You need a wide pot. The wide pot, again, you're going to clean away 24 hours, so then you need a wide pot. The wide pot could be any wide pot. The first wide pot, just to spread the flame, put water in, red pot, in the pot so the pot doesn't burn. Put it on the highest the flame for at least 15 minutes on each burner. If you have the right kind of stovetop, you can use a blech and do all four burners at once. But if you don't, you'll crack the stovetop, right? So if you have like an enamel stovetop, don't do that. Like if it's white or yellow or green or one of those colors, that's not, you know, it's enamel, so you're going to crack the enamel if you do all at once, if it's the one at a time. The rest of the stovetop, if it's enamel, cannot be koshered. You're going to cover it, preferably with foil, take all the burners off, take all the grates off, cover with foil, make nice holes to make sure that the gas is free, and then put your grates back on. But again, each one has to be koshered the same way, spread the flame. You could do all four at once if you want four big pots, if you want.
On those, the blech that you put on top of that, is that your Pesach blech?
It has to be something clean, which wasn't 24 hours.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't know if you can get your regular blech clean. That's a good question. You know, maybe you can. Maybe it is. I mean, my regular blech
I have a Pesach. I have a couple Pesach sizes.
Okay, so.
No, but I never know which one I'm supposed to use. I always go, which one?
So now we're pushing 48 hours in, because if you have to clean the blech 24 hours, you can now move to okay. Phase is another.
You're in the hotel for a long time.
Well, since Pesach is not Monday night this year.
Too late.
since Pesach is not Monday night this year, you've got plenty of time. Shabbos, you have a whole week. So you could just, after Shabbos.
Start tonight.
just after Shabbos, I got all, just take the blech off, clean it, and so on. Okay. Okay, if it's stainless steel top, what happened?
It's a little ledge.
It just fell. Okay, fine. Okay. I'm starting again. If it's a stainless steel top, then it can be koshered. How to kosher it? So again, if you have a blech, you put your blech on, you'll kosher everything all at once. But you could also kosher it by pouring boiling water over it. My old previous stovetop actually was metal, and it came off. The present one I have is metal, but doesn't come off. All right, so I have to think out what I actually do to it, but I certainly cover it when I'm done, but I do all the burners the way I just described to you. I don't do them all at once.
You do the burners and then you cover it also?
Yes, I cover underneath the burners. It's a gas stove, so I cover it underneath. Yeah. It's black. It's actually black. I'm not sure what it is. That's why I do it that way.
If it's stainless steel, you can't cover it?
It's black.
You can't kosher it?
You can. My previous one was stainless steel, and I koshered it. I still covered it because
pouring boiling water.
What it was? Pouring boiling water. Yes, pouring boiling water. I took it off. I took it off.
Right?
I could take it off. I could take it outside and pour boiling water over it. What is it?
You don't want to pour boiling water.
The air in between the burners.
Mine is the black. What? I don't know what it is.
No, so black is probably. It, I don't think it's metal.
You don't think it's metal.
No.
That's what
I'm saying.
She could
take
it off.
Yes.
I have the gas stove. It's glass with the burners on top of it.
Yeah, so the glass.
The glass I just clean as well as
you can. So just clean as well as you can. The main issue with the glass after you're done is that you can't put anything on the glass. Well, you're not. You can't.
Right.
It's all blocked by burners, by grates. Right. The electric ones, the glass on top.
Right.
So those are more problematic in terms of use on Pesach. You have to put things in between. Because you might put things down,
right.
Or you have to just, you know, have a very good memory and don't put things down. Okay, so, okay.
If you don't kosher the in between, mine is stainless steel, but it doesn't come off.
So then you can't put things down on it.
Right. I mean, I think the main thing is like if a carrot falls out of the soup and you want to.
Then that carrot goes in the garbage.
Right.
Whatever falls on, that goes in the garbage.
But you could cover it. And then you could pick up the carrot.
Right.
Forget about it. Right.
Just have the holes and you're still good. And you just,
what is it?
So if you cover the rest of the stove top, you just have the holes for the burners.
Right.
Then you're fine.
Fine. That's right. Right.
What about covering the grates after?
I don't cover the grates. The grates are koshered. The grates are koshered. Now, I happen to put my grates into the self-cleaning oven. I know the instructions say don't do it. I've done it at least 10 years. I don't know. I remember how old the oven is. At least 10 years old, and they still perfectly fit. They're cast iron. They don't make them like they did 30 years ago. They're fine.
What kind of cooktop do you have? What's the model?
It's a GE. I don't know.
profile.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I think I did that one year with mine.
I used to know the name of the GE something. It's got a name. It's got like
a profile or monogram.
It's like profile, maybe. I remember. Okay. If you text me in 2 hours, I'll take a picture and send it to you. Okay.
I think I did it 1 year, but there's...
Okay.
The paint comes off.
So warming drawers. So I have two things about warming drawers. One thing about warming drawers is about kasher warming drawers. So this is my machlokes, three different opinions, all right? Can you kasher not kosher warming drawers? I think kasher warming drawers. Okay, there are those. If you look in the booklets, you'll see someplace say you can kasher warming drawers. Shabbos use we'll get to in a minute. But warming drawers can be koshered. Again, you have to clean them, sit off for 24 hours. And you have to heat the warming drawers to a proper temperature. Well, how hot does the warming drawer get? Well, that's the problem. The warming drawer is designed not to get too hot. If it got too hot, it would cook. If it cooked, it wouldn't be a warming drawer. It would be an oven, which would ruin it for Shabbos altogether. It would make it useless, right? Right? I mean, you can't put things in the oven on Shabbos. You can't put things in the warming drawer either. The whole point of the warming drawer is to be able to keep things in, either keep things in or put things in, dry things on Shabbos, put things back in. You can't put things in fresh, but you put things back in that were there before. Okay, so how do you kosher the warming drawer? So this is a recommendation which I saw in a few different places, actually, although there's only one difference of opinion how many cans you should put in. Light one can of the type of canned fuel used to heat chafing dishes, e.g. sterno cans, in the warming drawer. And then it talks about not using the ones that have a wick, because ones that have a wick are made from some chametz-thick product. Okay, I've never seen those. All the sternos that I've seen, all the parties the caterers use, there's no wick, you just...
It's the gel.
It's a gel, and it melts. So 2 hours worth, and okay. But you have to leave the drawer open a little bit, otherwise, it'll extinguish. There's no air; it needs the air for combustion. It said one standard 2 or 3 hour ethanol or methanol can should be adequate to heat an average size warming drawer to leave when cold temperatures for about 2 hours. Okay. This is in the booklet I put in the booklet this year. Okay. Additionally, before putting the food in your warming drawer, the floor of the drawer must be covered with heavy-duty foil, and whatever you put in needs to be wrapped, right? Because even though you've koshered this warming drawer, you haven't done, like, a great job, put it that way. So that's the requirement. Almost everybody says, the ones who permit it, say, fine, line the bottom with heavy-duty foil and make sure what you put in the warming drawer is totally wrapped. Then there's a shop.
We need to know about the foil itself. You're saying heavy-duty foil.
Heavy-duty foil.
Number of millimeters thick or something? Or?
The heavy-duty foil is thicker foil.
Right on the back makes a heavy-duty foil.
Yeah. It's heavy. Yeah, it's...
It's become thinner.
Mm-hmm. See?
It's become...
No, the heavy-duty foil is not as heavy-duty as it used to be.
You know, I don't want to be accused of advertising and breaking the rules of the government, you know, but I think Reynolds is what you should use.
Reynolds is, like, some heavy-duty foil is not as thick as it used to be.
Reynolds also not?
I think a lot of them
could be. Okay.
They're not what they used to be. You need to double it.
Nothing's like it used to be. Okay. Okay. Okay.
Well, not by the end of the week. Okay.
You put the foil down before you put the can down?
No. The foil, no. When you're finished koshering it, before you put any food down, put foil on the bottom. Okay.
They're going to put in how thick the foil has to be.
This is a general Shabbos issue now. How to use a warming drawer. Okay. So, why can't you put food in the oven on Shabbos? Because it looks like you're cooking. Why can't you leave food in the oven on Shabbos? Well, you can leave it in. When it goes off, you can take it out. So most ovens today, you could time, they go off, hopefully there's no lights and all that, and you could take it out. So this is very common. When I come home, while I'm saying, well, I say a lot of stuff around Kiddush, all those pages that everybody skips, I say them all. For my minhag, for my father, we said, we said all that, and always during that time, the oven beeps and it goes off. Okay, that's kind of like timed, all right? And the food's still hot when we come to it. If you leave food in the oven, and the oven is still on, I'm talking about Shabbos, you can take the food out once, right? At a time when you know the oven's not going to go on when you take it out. When is that? When the oven is on. The fire's on, you know, and you take the food out, it's not going to go on because it's already on. It's not going to go off because you just made the temperature cooler. If anything, it'll stay on longer than it would have. Okay. But this is, halacha is called a psikresha lo nichale. It's going to happen, although it's not going to happen right away, so mine might be a psikresha, but the very worst, and it's something which I don't want. I'd be very happy if the fire went out now because I don't eat anymore. I'm not willing to have more food in Shabbos. That's what you can do. Friday night, you can take the food out once. Or you can do it Shabbos morning. You can't do it more than once. Open the food, open the oven, take all the food out. Okay. So the warming drawer, however, is designed. There are two ways to use a warming drawer, but there are two ways to use a blech, too. Some people hold, you don't use a blech, leave the food on, you can't take it out, put it back. Okay. My Messiah from Salvechik is if you have dry food, you can take it off the blech. As long as it's on from candle lighting until the stars come out Friday night, it's called Banish Mushos, you can then take it off in the refrigerator and put it back on the blech. Hot, again, dry food. Kugel, chicken without gravy. Okay. Not soup, not gravy, not meatballs and gravy stuff. Okay, but dry things. The same thing you can do with the warming drawer. Those things out of the blech or those out of the warming drawer from before Shabbos, you can put back in the warming drawer. But there's a problem. The problem is it looks just like you're cooking. Because after all, it looks just like an oven. The only thing is we know, okay, and there is another problem, and that is that does anybody have a warming drawer that's not adjustable? They're all adjustable. They used to make them not adjustable. That was better. Now they're all adjustable. Oh, so then you have to worry about adjusting it. That's the problem. You're not adjust on Shabbos. You have to do something to prevent you from adjusting on Shabbos. Not your memory, which might be good, not a sign. You need a blech. Okay, how do you make a blech in a warming drawer? So Willig, this actually was reviewed actually just this week in a telephone call. He reviewed this exact thing, which I heard him say 10 years ago, and I asked him the first time, maybe more than that maybe even. You line the bottom of the warming drawer with foil, which covers the place where the heat is. But now you need something to cover to make sure that you're not with Kol Shem Yichata. You might stoke the coals. You might change the temperature. You might adjust the setting, right? So you need something to remind you not to do that. And most settings are outside. Okay, so there are two things you could do. The thing he recommended then, and still now, is you take foil, your heavy-duty foil, you take it up the front, and you have it stick out the front door. It sticks out. When you close it, it sticks out. Right? And now, before you open it, of course you remember it's a blech. It's like a blech on top of the flame that reminds you not to adjust the flame on the stovetop. This is the way. Okay. The alternate way, if you can't do that, which most people can do that, is you somehow cover the adjusting knobs, or whatever, it might be digital, but whatever it is, you cover that in a way which disables you from doing it and reminds you not to do it. Okay. To which he said, this is what he said this week, which was like a light bulb to me, a piece of tape is not sufficient. Okay, so now I just want to digress this for a second. What about crock pots on Shabbos? So no question, you can leave a crock pot on before Shabbos, you take your cholent out and so on. Okay, it's a long story how to take it out, but we'll leave that for now. Okay, but what about the problem that there's a knob there? Right in front of it, there's a knob. Why is that not a problem? Don't you need a blech? The answer is you do need a blech. You need something to do to make sure you don't turn that knob. So Rabbi Willig's point was one piece of tape is not sufficient. You need to do something in a way which is, he didn't like specify what you do, you know, but there is, in the Gemara, it discusses this notion that tach petit, you take like a piece of clay and put it on. So that's not practical. But something to do, the idea is to make sure that you're not going to interfere and mistakenly, so that's necessary to make sure you don't. So there's two issues here. One, you want to make sure it doesn't look like cooking. And the second thing is to make sure you don't do anything that will make a cooking that will turn the knob. Okay.
When you're talking tape, you're talking like...
What?
You're talking a piece of masking tape?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it could be you take a piece of duct tape and put it like that.
Right.
And maybe it's more
electrical
significant.
Tape or something.
It's more significant. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's the choice that somebody has to make, that the... You know, masking tape doesn't ruin the surface of anything, and duct tape might. So that's a decision you have to make, what to do. Okay, microwave oven, clean thoroughly, wait 24 hours, fill a container with boiling water. This is also in the booklet, in like a longer version. Fill a container with boiling water, a cup, a bowl, heat it in microwave till it's steaming for 60 seconds, and it's now kosher. Again, whatever you put into the microwave should be totally covered. The glass plate or whatever plate you have in the bottom of the microwave cannot be kosher. Just take it out, put something else there. Piece of styrofoam, newspaper, cardboard, something else. You can't, whatever you have in the bottom of the microwave is not kosherable. The door should be covered with saran wrap on the inside. Right? That's where you can see through. I mean, it can be covered with anything inside. You put a piece of cardboard too.
Only
if you want to see through
seconds.
It, put saran wrap. What?
Only 60 seconds?
till it's steaming for 60 seconds.
60 seconds after it's
steaming. After it's steaming. Right. One of the articles actually says wait till it boils over also. Okay, so you want to do that, you can do that, but that's about the door, okay.
But if you have a microwave only for Passover.
Oh, fine. Don't do anything. Just use it. Enjoy. Enjoy. Okay.
Have two of everything, one for a Passover one?
No, that's good. That's good. Okay. Water heater, water cooler and heater, right? Like you have like a Poland Spring, whatever, that's what I have, Poland Spring. I don't think it's Poland Spring anymore. It used to be Poland Spring, now it's something else. They keep changing, like a Gilgal, Culligan, this one, that one, whatever it is. Okay, fine. But there's a water and cooler. Okay, so the cold doesn't need anything. Just clean it, put a new bottle of water on, pour some boiling water over the spigot, that's fine. The hot water, so many people say it's okay if you pour hot water through it, and some say no, and I think it really depends on your usage. If you always put hot water in an empty cup from it, then fine, just pour hot water over it. But most people don't do that. Most people put their stuff in first. But what are you putting in? You're putting in coffee, you're putting in decaf coffee. Most decaf coffee is chametz. Not all, but you'll see on the list some are, but most of your coffees are chametz. You're putting in Ovaltine, which is chametz. I know that because it's what I eat, right? It's chametz. So then that hot spigot is plastic. We don't kosher plastic for Pesach, right? So the hot water then becomes a problem. If you have a Instahot on your sink, people are more makil on that. Again, clean it. Obviously, clean it to what you clean it. You wash, whatever you rub it. Wait 24 hours, pour boiling water over it, and everybody seems to feel that that's sufficient. Okay, for that. Okay, tabletops should be cleaned and covered.
What about like a tabletop like this?
Do you eat on it?
No, like, I don't know. Has anybody ever eaten on this? Like, as your normal purpose is not...
According to the rules of this Beis Medrash, the answer is no, but I can't tell you that's for sure, because I know people come in here during Shal Shudas and bring food.
Okay, so, right, so you know that. So does this have to be covered if you're not going to use it for eating, let's say?
If there's a table in your house that you don't use for eating, you don't have to cover it. If there's a table that is used for eating, you do have to cover it. If there's a table that is normally used for eating, it should be covered, even if you're not going to eat on it.
Even if it's normally... What I'm saying is, let's say, like, you normally don't want people to eat on this table, this one here.
Right, but they do.
So would this table be covered on Pesach in the shul?
Yeah, well, we're not going to cover it, but it's a good, really good question.
It should be covered. If I had this type of table.
So maybe I should speak to the president and get an allocation. We should do like a lot of the shuls do. You know, on Shabbos, they have, during the week, they're uncovered, and Shabbos, they have cloths on them. All right?
No, I'm just, okay. I'm not, it's like, let's say by the TV, I don't want anybody to eat downstairs at all.
Uh-huh.
Occasionally, maybe somebody brought, a guest brought down, like...
Hot food?
I don't know what they...
So if they bring hot
coffee. A cup of coffee. Who knows?
A cup of
coffee,
okay.
But I don't expect them to have done
it. Yeah,
that.
Okay.
Nobody will be eating there on Pesach that I would expect. So do I have to cover that?
It's not a regular eating table. I don't think you have to. The question is this a regular eating table or not? I don't know the answer to that because I don't really... All I do is I notice people have stuff in here. It's all should it, so I don't really pay attention. Like, what are they eating?
You know, was this used for...
Like, are they taking the hot conditions? The hot conditions are hummus.
Or I don't know what happened when they study for family learning. Is this used here?
No, the pizza's in there.
Okay.
The food's not in here. So. They're learning how to treat Beis Medrash too. That's Zach's doing, not my doing. He told me, no, we don't bring food in here. The food's afterwards in there. Okay, that was actually an issue with somebody. We once had somebody who was, some allergy they were worried about. So they weren't going to go with the food. They only stayed in here.
Okay.
Yes.
Well,
but any food on the table it probably wouldn't be celespo. Does that make a difference?
Oh, so that's why. But we serve hot knishes, the shal shudas.
Those are yassel.
And that's chametz, and it's yassel espo. Yeah, they're right in the oven. They're hot.
So how were they warmed up? They were on the left from.
They're left in the oven. They're left in the oven the whole Shabbos. The soup also. We have soup of shal shudas too. Left in the oven the whole Shabbos.
I got a couple of shal shudas.
Okay.
No, I mean, I will say that I've found in Hush Gumbo, like I've found, like when I've come, when they've had the family learning, like some candy or Coke, like over on there, once or twice in there.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I said somebody's got to be eating. Yeah. That's why I said family learning. I've never, you
okay.
know.
Yeah, the, okay, yeah. Okay. Okay, we started with this actually before everybody got here, but this was like a new insight for me this year. So, you know, I've always said this before. Lactate, if those who are lactose intolerant can buy lactated milk before Pesach and use it on Pesach. Pills, lactate, are chametz. They cannot be used on Pesach, period, because they're not medicine. They're to enable somebody to have milchik. Okay, so don't have milchik. I mean, that's not, you don't have to have milchik on Pesach. I understand it's a difficulty, but you can't have chametz on Pesach either. That's also a difficulty. So, but the lactate milk, fine. But now, I got an answer today from the OU that the same is true about lactate cottage cheese. Again, with the OU, if somebody is lactose intolerant, the lactate cottage cheese can also be purchased before Pesach, because the notion is the lactate enzyme is apparently chametz based, and that's really the issue. But once it's mixed in, so it's now batel only before Pesach. There's no beetle on Pesach or chametz. If you drop one speck of flour into your 100-gallon tureen of soup on Pesach, the whole thing is chametz, right? If you did it before Pesach, it's batel. Okay. So that's the notion there. Okay, there are some side issues which come up for different families. So, Sfardim have soft matzah. It is pesodik. You may not eat it. It doesn't ruin any of your dishes, but you can't eat it, right? Because it's against our minhag. The same is true about kidneys. Kidneys not chametz either.
What about the lactate milk? For if you have somebody in the house who's having the lactate milk, can it be
That's batel. That lactate milk is, theoretically, anybody can drink that lactate milk. I don't think they should, because they don't need to.
Okay.
But theoretically, that's batel, period. Okay. So the same is true about kibrutz. Some people don't, you know, eat kibrutz. They don't put, you know, matzah into the liquids during the first 7 days of Pesach. That also does not make the dishes chametz stick, although those who are marketing kibrutz are very marketing kibrutz, have family minhag, which is very strong about that, but that's the way it is. Okay. But they don't ruin the dishes. But again, you're not allowed to eat them unless it's your minhag. Okay, some Shabbos issues. Obviously, Shabbos need a blech. There are a few Seder issues. So, woman drew on the blech I spoke about. I think the biggest issue is not a halachic issue, but a technical issue. And all the women could appreciate this, unless the men are the ones who make the timing and have to figure out how do you serve warm food that's not dry. When we get to the right place in Shulchan Aruch, when are you getting there? I don't know, right? How long is your Seder normally? How long does it normally take you to get there? But Friday night, you can't do what you could do on a Tuesday night of Yontif. You can take the food in, you can take the food out, you can turn the food up, you can turn the food down, right? As long as the food's there, you can turn the electronics aside. But, you know, let's assume just a regular gas stove and gas, you could turn up and down, right? They're not old-fashioned knobs. Right, so Shabbos you can't do that at all. So timing is an issue. So you have to, something you have to think about in advance, what you're serving, what the timing is, and so on. It's more complicated than a regular Seder night. Some foods have to be prepared before Shabbos, which normally probably people prepare them maybe before Shabbos. Charoses. So the mixing of charoses, you can't mix peanut butter consistency on Shabbos. All right. Peanut butter, anyway, it's kidney oats, but that's at least we think, okay. But it's about consistency. So, depending on how thick charoses is, you can't make charoses thick on Shabbos. Before Shabbos, you can. If you make charoses on Shabbos, you have to make it very liquidy, right? Salt water is an issue. That's not an issue of consistency. That's an issue. Salt water is used for tanning, all right? Halachically used for tanning. So you're not allowed to make salt water on Shabbos in general. So you're supposed to make salt. Now normally you go to the Seder, you can make it and so on. Okay, no problem. But so you're not supposed to do that. So that's the salt water should be made before Shabbos. If you grate horseradish, that should be done before Shabbos. And food preparations, obviously, whatever you normally do before Shabbos, you have to do before Shabbos. It's not the Yontif. One issue, which I think is not only a Shabbos issue, it's also a Yontif issue. You know, some people think the most complicated aspect of Shabbos is the halachos of cooking, which is definitely complicated. But most people who are, like, really in halachic studies feel that the issue of borer is much more complicated than Bishul, of separating out. Okay, so I go to my closet and I look for my suit jacket, and it's dark. And if it's light, it's hard to tell me they're black and it's black and black. A couple of very dark blues, but they're almost all black, right? Okay? Okay, well now, this happened to me actually a few weeks ago on a Friday. I was in a rush, and I went into my closet, and I pulled out a jacket, and I thought it was where I put my jacket last Saturday night, and it was, except it was the next one over, all right? So I come to shul, and I'm wearing a different jacket than pants, right? So did anybody else notice? I don't know, but I'm horrified because I'm looking, right? It happens to be I was actually going to Hollywood for a bar mitzvah for dinner, so I stopped on my way home and changed my jacket, okay? But that's the point. So, but you can't take the jacket out. Oh, it's the wrong jacket. That's borer, right? That's a borer issue. You can't go to your sock drawer and start taking out the wrong sock, and you have to take the right one. Borer, general principle, you have to take the one that you want and not take out the one that you don't want. That's called psolus. Okay, what?
But you didn't do it on purpose. You didn't want the bad jacket. So why would you borer it? Like, you're supposed to
it doesn't matter.
The bad, but you didn't select the bad. The bad just came by accident.
Okay, let me ask you this. What if you go to the supermarket and you pick the milk that's sour?
Yeah.
What do you have at home?
Sour milk.
The milk is sour. That's not the one you wanted, but that's what you got. Well, that's what I got. I got the psolus. I got the one I didn't want.
But why can't you put it back? I don't understand.
Does that mean I have to choose?
No, I'm not allowed to select the one I don't want. It's
right.
It's not the putting it back the problem. The problem is taking it out and saying, oh, it's not the one I want. Now I just separate it out, the one I don't want, the one I do want.
But at that point, why can't you take the one you want? Then that wouldn't be...
But you already picked the
one. No, taking the one I want is not a problem. It's that first I took the one I didn't want. That's the problem. And then I decide I don't want it, and I put it over there.
So
that's
so
borer. That's borer. Yes.
What if you want
okay,
the bad
so,
one and put the one you wanted on top of the bad one?
Okay. Anyway, let me cut to the chase. This is about matzah. It's not about suits, all right?
So you're not putting that's the bad thing. One
so
back.
You have
okay,
to pick the
so now when you... Right, so now, what happens when you... So I, anyway, try to separate all my matzahs, 10 pounds of matzahs, I separate them all before Yontif. Grade 1, grade 2, grade 3, all right? That's what they are. And then there's broken ones going to the big kitchen, large kitchen garbage bag, and that's enough for the whole week for extra matzahs, okay? But now I have boxes. So all the boxes are labeled, Seder 1, Seder 2, and so on. So, okay, but if you start doing that on Pesach night, so now the first one you take out, it's got a little hole in it. What are you doing with it? You can't put it over there. That's borer. You can't eat it. You can't put it on the Seder plate. So do it before Pesach. That's the bottom line. All right? So that's an issue, which may be an issue for Yontif too. Okay? But certainly this is for Shabbos.
All the eggs have to be peeled.
Okay. What is it?
All the eggs have to be peeled also before Shabbos.
So peeling the eggs. Okay. I'm not sure. You have to peel the eggs before Shabbos, but it's a good idea. You only have to boil the eggs before Shabbos, right?
No, but when I have to peel them, or am I allowed to peel them on Shabbos?
Yes, I think peeling eggs on Shabbos is not such an issue because peeling something where you have to take the outside off in order to get to the good part is not considered borer. Like taking banana peel off or an orange peel off is not considered borer, right?
Okay.
There might be peels which are borer, right? But I think those are not. Okay.
You put your socks on and there's a hole in them. You have to go to shul with your socks because you picked the wrong pair of socks. Is that what you're saying? Like, I've noticed it's a run, and I'm like, I have to wear that because that's what I
picked.
What? I'm serious.
No.
Now you have to pick the outfit
no,
before
so,
it. It's worse.
No, so
like, I put it on. And then
no,
no. You split your pants.
No,
what do you do?
Okay. The issue is not what you have to wear. The issue is what you're taking out. If you take out the wrong thing, you're not obligated to keep it. But you should be careful not to take it out.
You
go to your drawer, and you know, those blue socks have a hole. Don't take them. The black socks don't have a hole. Take those, right? So, okay, in the dark, it's much more difficult. If you put on...
The problem is you noticed you were wearing the wrong jacket at shul, or did you notice right away you had the wrong jacket?
I did it on Friday. It wasn't a problem with borer. I'm just pointing out what could happen. I didn't do any halakhic wrong. I did it on Friday. But if I Shabbos morning, I took it out.
You took out the wrong jacket.
Too bad.
It would have been a problem.
Right,
I would have been staying there trying to figure out, okay, what should I do now?
Okay.
I probably would have.
I thought you meant that you specifically went to shul wearing the wrong jacket because you had
no. No.
Women are taking out. No, I don't want to wear this now. I think I will wear this now. I think I'll wear the other top. You don't have to decide your whole outfit during the week. Like Shabbos morning, you take out the skirt, you take out, oh, I think I'll wear this top. But nah, it's you know.
No, the naz is a problem.
Right.
The naz is a problem.
Didn't look right.
The naz is
right.
A problem. The sandal is a problem, yes. Okay, anyway. Let's
address someone.
Okay.
I could be overboard.
I should not have given my example. I just gone straight to the matzah. Okay. Okay. Okay, we'll get through. Okay, 5 more minutes. Let's finish. Okay. So, the second night of Pesach is, of course, Motzi Shabbos, which changes only a few things. It is never permissible to prepare the first of Yontif, the second day of Yontif. Never. All right? So, in terms of preparation, there's nothing you could have done if it was Tuesday and Wednesday. There's nothing you could have done Tuesday to prepare for Wednesday night Seder that you would be allowed to do on Yontif, you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. Because you're not allowed to prepare anything on the first day for the second day. Okay. But there are things you have to do the second night which you don't do the first night. So, for example, the second night, which on the second day, Yontif. For example, we have the famous called Yak Nahaz, Yayin, Kiddush, Ner, Havdalah, Zman. In addition to, right, Yayin, Kiddush, Gagofen, and the Kiddush, and Shechianu, you also have Ner and Havdalah, right, because it's Saturday night. So, that's the famous Halakha of Shmos Hill. What's the order supposed to be? Okay, so that's the order we follow. Just follow your Haggadah. All the Haggadahs have the right order. But what do you do about the Ner? What are you supposed to do about the Ner? So normally Saturday night, we would take a candle, and then at the end of Havdalah, you extinguish the candle somehow. Like this, like that. Okay, you extinguish somehow. You can't extinguish things on Yontif. So you're not going to extinguish the Havdalah candle. You're not going to use the Havdalah candle at all. You're going to use the candles you use for Yontif. Right? You live for Yontif. That's what you're going to use. Okay. Some people have a wrong minhag to put them together like this. Why is it wrong minhag? Because it's kibui. You're extinguishing when you do that. You think you're making a better light. No, you're maybe extinguishing light, and that's not allowed. You should just, there's two candles next to each other. Yes, it's true. You don't have a torch. That's life. You just use it the way they are. Those two. Okay. The last days being Friday and Shabbos, so you have to make a shashilin on Thursday. Just a couple of things which are new in the world. So I looked around. Quinoa is always like this issue, good, bad, and different. And all the lists I found, I didn't find one that had a product with quinoa that had a pea on it. But I put in my pages, if you find quinoa with a pea, it's good. Because I imagine they're going to be it. Why? It's not in the Star K book, it's not in the OU book. I didn't find any. The only thing I found, the Star K book had a 50-pound bag of something. Anybody buying 50 pounds of quinoa? You could divide it up between the whole shul, I guess. But, okay. So, but I imagine there are some. Whether they made this year or not made this year, I don't know. There are now Jaffa fruits with the OU from Israel, which means they took trumos and masros. They took care of everything. Normally, if you find a Jaffa fruit in the supermarket, don't buy it. Because you don't know what they did. Did they take trumos, masros? You have to take tithes. Did they take? It's very complicated. So, unfortunately, if you have untithed, you don't know, a stamp fruit from Israel, you don't buy it. Unless, you know, if it's packaged, it's got a kashrus in one, you know they took care of it. So there are Jaffa fruits now with the OU, citrus fruits with the OU, they're being imported. If you look in, this, I found this very interesting. The OU book is not in yet, but on page 43, 45, and 47 are Pesachic food substitutions. Right? Meaning, this you could use during the year. How do you make, what's the parallel of that? Put this and this together and you get the same thing, but it's Pesachic, right? There's 3 pages of them. I didn't understand most of them, but those who cook will understand what they want for substitutions. And the other thing I found very interesting is that there is now a new refrigerator. We all have our refrigerators, and we do what we do for Shabbos. A light goes off, some have a nice plug, mine has a button that turns it off for 3 days, and it's Shabbos mode, good, okay. But there's a new one, which is also in the OU book, there's a little article about it called General Electric Shabbos Keeper Fridge. It has, like, signs from Israel and from here and everywhere, and it is pre-programmed for the next 30 years, to always be off on Shabbos. You know, so I'm thinking to myself, why would somebody want to buy 30 years? 120, right? But anyway, that's what it is. It says program for the next 30 years. I guess in 30 years, they figure it's not going to last 30 years in the refrigerator. Or in 30 years, you'll find somebody who can reprogram it.